This is the Financial Side of Life podcast, episode 17. Hi, everybody. This is Angie Furbotten-LaRosi. I'd like to welcome you to another episode of our podcast where I'm joined by fellow fiduciary certified financial planner pros from around the country who are part of the Facebook group called Ask the Experts About Paying for College. All of us not only focus on typical planning areas like retirement and investments, but we are all very strong in the area of college planning and not just saving for college. Many families find themselves not eligible for much or any financial aid, yet can't easily write a check for the full amount of college. We describe these families as being on the bubble. For these families who have college staring them in the face in the next year or two, we emphasize college financial planning to help them cut the cost of college and make a plan for how to pay for all 4 years. I invite you to join our Facebook group and be part of the conversation so that we can stop the student loan crisis one family at a time and help families make smarter college buying decisions. Today, I'm joined by Quinn Arnold of Arnold & Moat Wealth Management at arnoldmoat.com, and he's in Iowa. I also have Alyssa Lum of Luminate Financial Planning in Sterling, Virginia, and she can be found at luminatefp.com. And joining us today is also Brad Bob of Bob Financial, who's in Illinois, and he can be found at bobbfinancial.com. And I'm Angie Furbotten-LaRosi of Avea Financial Planning. I'm located in Washington, and my site is aveafp.com. And I'd like to welcome you all. Thanks for joining in today.
Thanks, Angie.
Hi, Angie. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Angie. Glad to be here.
All right. So our topic today is on both the FAFSA and the CSS profile. But before we get into our conversation, I'm going to let each of our guests introduce themselves real quick. Hey, Quinn, would you start?
Thanks, Angie. Hi, everyone. This is Quinn Arnold. I am a passionate financial planner for families who want to make that leap to college for their children, but don't know how to pay for it financially and don't want to just take out loans. And so I love talking through that because that was part of my story growing up and getting through college was thinking about loans and how to deal with them. And I think it's something that we should be all discussing a lot more than we actually do.
Great. Okay. Alyssa, how about you?
Sure. Hi, Angie. Thanks for having me today. My name is Alyssa Lum with Luminate Financial Planning in Sterling, Virginia, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. I am a certified financial planner, and I primarily work with families with college-bound kids. Most of the families I work with are, I would say most have kids that are about middle school age, and they're just starting to think ahead to just all the issues that come with saving for college, how to pay for college, you know, and we're trying to set them up so that they're not taking giant student loans and causing themselves a whole lot of headaches in the future.
Great. So. Okay. And joining us today for the first time is Brad Bob. Hi, Brad.
Hello, Angie. Thanks for having me today. My company is Bob Financial, based out of Springfield, Illinois. And I serve a couple of niches, one of which is federal employees and the other one is college-bound families. So one area that I found that I can add a lot of value to my clients is helping them plan for college and save money on the cost of college. So regardless of how late you wait to start planning for college, you know, the four of us here know that there's still ways that you can probably save money on the
right
cost of college.
And real quick about myself, I work with Gen X families, in Gen X generation and have kids who are nearing going on to college as well, but also focusing on planning for retirement. For our listeners who might not know much about the financial aid process, the FAFSA and the CSS profile, I'm wondering if somebody can speak to what each of those is, just a little bit about the background of those.
Sure, I can jump in here, Angie. Filling out the FAFSA and the CSS profile are really just the first step in the whole process of trying to qualify for financial aid for your student for college. Both the FAFSA and the CSS profile are going to ask a lot of questions about your family's income and assets and your child's income and assets. And at the end of that process, they're going to give you a number called your expected family contribution, which is going to be the starting point when you're working with the different schools of how you may or may not qualify for need-based aid for those colleges. And I should say that it's also not just for need-based aid. A lot of families think that if they're not going to get need-based aid, that they shouldn't even bother with the FAFSA, but that's definitely not true. A lot of merit scholarships as well at least want to have seen that your family filled out the FAFSA. So it's kind of a good starting point for everyone when you're starting the whole college process.
And so what are some distinctions between the FAFSA and the CSS profile?
Well, this is Quinn. And, so the FAFSA is the standard that the vast majority of schools use. That's the free application for federal student aid. The CSS profile builds off of, like Alyssa said, some similar information, but there are differences in the CSS profile. There's not one right answer for that, for what's included. It does depend on the school. They have some leeway over what types of information to ask families. For the most part, CSS profile digs in more into the family's financial situation, so they ask more specific questions and want to know about assets that are different from the FAFSA, like your home equity, that the FAFSA doesn't count at all. And it will have more questions for you around both parents and wanting to know about assets and income for both parents, regardless sometimes of the marital status. There's also going to be differences for business owners. And so some of our clients find out that CSS profile is a bit more intrusive or can be more intrusive. But the short answer is it really depends on the school that you're applying to that's using the CSS profile for just how different it is from the FAFSA and what they want to focus in on their set of questions.
Okay.
Yeah. And could I jump in just with one general rule of thumb? Quinn is right that most schools use the FAFSA. Almost all of the public schools out there are going to use the FAFSA, but there are a couple exceptions. I know here in Virginia, the University of Virginia is one of the only public schools that does require the CSS profile in addition to the FAFSA. So again, most public schools are going to just look for the FAFSA, but then a smaller set of schools, mostly your private schools, are going to look at the CSS profile as well.
Angie, what that'll mean too in practice, that brings up a good point that Alyssa was highlighting there is, a lot of kids will apply to multiple schools, you know, sometimes 8-10 different schools. They're casting a wide net for those schools that are FAFSA based, that it's going to be just the one time that you fill that out. For the CSS profile, it will be unique to each school. And so you'll be, if you are applying to 10 schools, 8 of them are FAFSA related. You just fill up you do that the one time and all 8 schools get that information. The 2 CSS profile schools, we'd each have their own forms or their own information that they're asking for. And so that would be unique for them. They might also want to look at your FAFSA.
Okay. And that brings up something too I wanted to add. Is that the FAFSA is a free, the F in FAFSA stands for free application. And the CSS profile does have a cost to it. So if you are applying to 10 different institutions, the CSS profile is going to, you know, be an expense for people.
Yep.
Yeah, it can definitely add up. I mean, it's $25 for the first school that you apply to on the CSS profile, then I believe it's another $16 for each additional school. And just to clarify what Quinn was saying is you can do the CSS profile all at one time for multiple schools. It's just that you're going to have separate questions within that profile for each school. So you can, you know, if you plan ahead, you can put all your schools into your application. It's just that he's right. There's going to be a different section within your CSS profile for each of the schools that your child is applying to.
Okay. And they demark those by a name of the university between
sections? It'll actually tell you which school that section of questions is for.
Okay. Great. And so,
one thing I don't think we mentioned is the CSS profile is going to be a lot more time intensive than the FAFSA. The FAFSA, what would you guys estimate, around an hour or so? And then the CSS profile, any estimate as far as how long that would take to fill out?
Yeah, I mean, my experience is I think for families who plan ahead and have all their documents lined up before they start, you can probably do the FAFSA in less than an hour, I would say. And the profile is going to be more, I would say probably, depends how many schools your child is applying to, but probably an hour to an hour and a half would be pretty realistic. Maybe more if your child is applying to like 10 CSS profile schools.
Yeah, Brad, sometimes, and I think a few of us have been involved with this, schools will have like FAFSA night or something like that. And I think we were scheduling like half hour sessions for that, but you, to Alyssa's point, you do sort of have to have everything lined up if you're going to do it in about half an hour, but you could crank through the FAFSA in that amount of time.
One thing I want to jump in as well, a lot of people get tripped up on the FAFSA is assuming that the student is filling it out. And while that might be true in the FAFSA world, in my experience, it's usually the parents that are filling out the FAFSA. And so the questions are all asked from the student's perspective. It gets kind of confusing. They'll ask, do you have any dependents? And what they mean is, does your child have any dependents? So it gets a little bit confusing. And you also, your child is the one who actually has to sign off on the FAFSA. So if you've got a teenager who doesn't check their email very often, you definitely want to be on them to actually go in and, you know, submit the FAFSA. Right.
Okay. What is the output?
Sure. So I'll jump in. The output you're going to get is called your expected family contribution, which we shorten a lot of times when talking to people, call it your EFC. And your EFC is a minimum number. So if you're, and it's per household. So if your EFC comes out to be $20,000, what that means to you or to your family is that that's the minimum contribution you're expected to make for your kid's school. Okay. It could be more than that, but that's the minimum. And also, again, that's per household. So it's not per student. So it's $20,000, whether you have one student or four students in college at one time.
And just to clarify, that's per year, not per, it's not for all 4 years combined.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. So anything more on the output of these financial aid calculators?
Well, yeah, we should talk a little bit about the process of it too. With the FAFSA, this is all online nowadays, and you'll have this sent off to the schools that you're interested in. You can get the information sent later if there's another school, if you're doing this pretty early, and if there's another school that comes along. Right now when we're taping this, we're in the end of November, so a lot of people are have already completed the FAFSA and they're starting to work on applications. You pick the schools that you wanted to go to. Obviously with the CSS profile, you've picked that as part of the process as well, like because you're going to answer those schools' particular questions. And so the school gets records of it. They then use that as that goes to their financial aid department. And that's where then all of the art of this happens. So the FAFSA itself is, and the CSS profile for that matter, are just, you know, dry forms that you're filling out online that have a lot of information about you. But then it kicks off the financial aid process after that. And by completing it, you've taken that first step. And so, Angie, I don't want to steal your thunder, but I like the phrase that you used that in the past when you've talked about this, that And I'm going to let you say it. What does the FAFSA and the CSS profile open up for
you? Well, what I've come to understand is that I call it like a portal between you and the university that you're applying for. Because what this does is, like with the FAFSA, it's a moment in time for the most part. And everyone's situation can change throughout the year and so on. And so if your situation was to change at some point, once you've submitted the FAFSA, they now know that you're interested in their university. And now you've got this line of communication that has been opened up between you and in the institution to clarify or to revise or to make an appeal for your situation, especially if it has changed since you filed. So it's just a way to open that line of communication between you and the university. And sometimes I actually came across a situation where a family was most likely going to be flagged for more information. But the fact is, they still finished the FAFSA. They completed it. They got it done. They opened that line of communication. And then most likely, it would require some follow-up from the student and to the university. Another thing I wanted to add with regard to sort of this difference between the FAFSA and the CSS profile is affordability when it comes to the universities you're applying to. So depending on, because of the fact that the FAFSA and the CSS profile ask for different information, the CSS profile goes deeper into your true family financial situation, you will likely end up with different expected family contributions for the FAFSA and the CSS profile. And so that can make some colleges or some universities more or less affordable. And so when we talk to families about affordability, where is it that they're expecting you to pay more or less based on their financial aid calculations is something to consider when applying to and accepting to go to a university.
Angie, can I just jump in there as well? So when you when you finish the FAFSA, after you submit it, you get an email. And in that email, you can see your EFC number. They don't exactly spell it out as like your EFC number is this. But if you look carefully, you will see a number that is your EFC, which, as Brad said, that's kind of the minimum amount you probably need to expect to pay per year at almost any school. The profile is a little different in that they're not going to ever give you a number. Because each school takes your financial information and has their own calculations, you're not going to know probably until you get the financial aid package from the school what it's going to look like. Whereas, again, with the FAFSA, you can have a pretty good idea if you're going to be a good candidate for financial aid or not based on that number that you get.
So with the CSS profile, how does a family ultimately end up knowing, what the effect of that calculation is?
Right. So whereas with the FAFSA, you do get a number that is your expected family contribution, shortly after submitting that FAFSA. The CSS profile, you're never, as far as I know, you're never going to see an actual EFC number based on how you filled out the CSS profile. When you'll find out is basically in the spring, which is typically when the colleges send out their acceptance letters and their financial aid packages. So it won't say your EFC is this number and therefore you're getting this amount of need-based aid. It's going to be more like we're offering your child this amount of, grants or loans or whatever it is each year. And that's it. And so you're not going to know specifically what it was about your financial profile that led to that. Now you can always go back to the financial aid office. You can always appeal it. You can always ask them questions, but I don't think you're ever going to get like a, here's your EFC for your CSS profile.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sometimes in the college planning world, we hear a lot about insurance products being used to maybe either shelter assets so that they don't appear in the financial aid calculations. How does this help or maybe not help when we're looking at both the FAFSA and the CSS profile?
Very interesting question, Angie. And something most of us in the business have all come across at one point. But the theory there, thought process is that if a family that's applying for college or filling out these forms, if they fill these forms out, before they fill the forms out, if they take assets that they have and move those into a life insurance policy or an annuity, they're actually not counted on the FAFSA. Now, they could be counted on the profile, but they're not counted for sure on the FAFSA. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of those assets before families fill the FAFSA out, so that they pay less for college. However, from my experience, I have not found that to be a good strategy. There's other ways that families can actually do some different things with their assets to help lower their EFC without using the insurance products. The problem becomes that when you use those insurance products, it greatly restricts your access to the money, and you're also paying most of the time big commissions with those products, to where it's going to be quite a while before you will have, say you put $20,000 in there, it'll be quite a while before you have a full $20,000 in there again, because you just paid a sales charge when you put that money in there. And I'm sure that we have a couple other opinions here too from Quinn and Alyssa.
I mean, I'll chime in, and I agree with Brad. This does pop up from time to time, but it's pretty rarely a good idea to put your money into an insurance product, just to hopefully save yourself a little bit in need-based financial aid. You end up paying probably more in fees than you're going to save. And Brad's right. I mean, you're going to tie up your money. I mean, there's a lot of reasons not to buy life insurance. Well, there's a lot of reasons that this is a bad idea, I should say.
Well, and I would add to that, for the FAFSA and CSS profile, so much is dependent on income. And if you have a high income, no matter what you do to shelter assets or how your assets are put into those calculations, you're likely going to still not be eligible for much or any financial aid anyway. And so it really is where it comes into taking a look at the whole picture before committing to something that's pretty irrevocable once you've bought into insurance products, because it just may not help.
Yeah, I agree, Angie.
Sorry. I just want to add one thing with what you said there, and I agree with what you said. Folks with higher incomes, families with higher incomes, are probably going to end up paying most of the cost for college. However, we should probably clarify on what we mean by high incomes, because I'll talk to somebody that has a household income of $100,000 or $150,000, and they think that there's no way that they'll ever qualify for financial aid. But that's not true. I've seen families with household incomes of $150,000, even $200,000, qualify for financial aid. So just because your income is up over $100,000 doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to qualify for financial aid. And one specific example would be, let's say you have two or three kids in school at one time, and the cost of attendance is $50,000 for each kid. So if you have two kids in school with a cost of attendance of $50,000, that's $100,000. And if you make $200,000, and I'm just going off of memory here, but an expected family contribution with a household income of $200,000 is somewhere around $40,000 to $50,000. So, and that doesn't include any assets, but just trying to get the point across that you could still qualify for aid.
Okay. Good to know. That's why we tend to encourage everyone to complete the FAFSA. Don't assume anything until you've actually gone through the process. So, okay. Are there any mistakes that you see families making? Anything come up over and over again that you would like to make sure people know about?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. So a few technical things on the FAFSA. That's the one I'm more familiar with. People are don't keep track of the asset values as they are today. That's what the FAFSA is asking for. So they should come with like printouts or screenshots from the bank accounts that they have, any of their investment accounts. It's really just a snapshot, like I think you said earlier, Angie. Another issue is with divorced families. That's, you know, somewhat common for kids that are going off to school, that they're navigating. How does that work? And the rules are pretty clear that it's the financials of the parent. So we mentioned earlier, remember, this is, you're looking at income and assets of both the student and then also the parent, and this is all written from the student's perspective. But it's the parent who you are living with one day longer in the previous year. And so it's really quite technical in the sense of it's not, there's not any gray area with divorce, that if, you know, the parent who makes more money has to fill out the FAFSA, or the parent who the kid likes more or something like that. It really comes down to who is the student living with at the time and living with the majority of the time by the letter of the law. And so you can, actually, if you're concerned about parents having disparate incomes, one parent makes a lot more than the other, or has for some reason a lot more assets than the other, if the divorce was a while ago, then you could manipulate that system by having the child live with one parent for a longer period of time. That doesn't work the same way with the CSS profile, but you know, we deal with that somewhat frequently with families who have experienced divorce, and that's a big piece of that causes confusion a lot. So be careful about that piece and not making a mistake on the FAFSA with that.
Another mistake that I see families making is it gets a little confusing when the FAFSA is asking about assets, and specifically when they're asking about parent assets versus a student's assets. And a 529 is actually considered a parent's assets. So even though the 529 is typically for the benefit of one of your children, or, you know, some families even have multiple 529s, like one for each of their children, those are all considered parent assets. So I've seen people just include the 529 for the child that they're filling out that FAFSA for, when really you need to include all the 529s that you own. Again, like Quinn was saying, the snapshot as of that day of what those are worth on that day.
Yeah, that's, Alyssa, that is a good point. And I think also just making sure that people understand that assets a child has are dinged or are counted more heavily than what a parent has. There are exclusions at the parent level. The formula is different for the parent. So that's a mistake you don't want to make, because it, counting that in your child's name if you have a 529 set up.
Definitely.
What about retirement assets?
Retirement assets are not counted on the FAFSA or the profile. So money's in IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, Roth IRAs, they are not counted on those forms. And to piggyback on the points that Alyssa and Quinn just made, talking about kids' assets actually counting more than parents' assets, one mistake that I see families make is not being familiar with the form and the questions that they're going to ask before they fill it out and submit it. One very common thing that I see families do is they will take money that their kids receive for holidays, birthdays, things of that nature, and then they'll just put that money into a savings account or a CD for them. And over an 18-year time period, it's pretty easy for that money to build up, and it's not uncommon for somebody to fill the FAFSA out with $10,000 in a kid's checking or savings account. And by doing that, if that $10,000 is in the kid's account, kids' assets actually count at 20% on the FAFSA. So that means they're going to have to contribute an additional $2,000 towards the cost of the school, cost of college. where if it was a parent asset or in a 529, then it would only be $564 because parental assets are counted at 5.64%. So that can easily make a big difference by just having those assets in a kid's name when you fill the FAFSA.
And that's what we mean when we talk about asset shifting or shifting assets from, you know, ownership of the student to the parent to kind of position the family in a better way with regard to the FAFSA. Okay.
Agree. And one, and just one other quick note, which I didn't mention there, if you were to take that $10,000 and move that into a Roth IRA or two Roth IRAs, then that money is not counted at all in on the FAFSA. So as we just, Angie just asked the question about retirement assets in a Roth IRA, those assets are not counted on the FAFSA. So then it decreases the cost of the school, or it actually decreases your EFC.
Oh, another planning opportunity, and this takes a little bit of pre-planning because when we talk about income for both the parent and the child, we're using the tax return from the prior year. And if a student, for example, is going to start college in the fall of 2019, they're going to be looking at the tax year of 2017. And so when you're looking at trying to position yourself as poor, I guess I would say, as possible, if you're able to control your income, it is going to be the year prior to when that student is starting college. I just wanted to add that.
Good point.
One thing I'd say too, you know, on the topic of mistakes people make with the FAFSA, and for that matter with the CSS profile, though I think it's just more common with the FAFSAs, just trying to, you know, score well, for lack of a better phrase, on the FAFSA to get your EFC low, and then not thinking through the broader strategy of how you're going to plan for college. And you know what I mean about that is, Brad was talking about this a little bit earlier about the EFC is, you know, just a starting point at what you're going to pay, or for what you'll pay as a family. And and getting the EFC really low is a laudable goal if you have a chance to get need-based aid at the school that your child's realistically going to attend. If they're going to a school, though, where need-based aid is not readily available, or if it's all been used up already by the time your child's accepted and has a financial aid package, or whatever the situation may be, there's a lot of reasons why having that as the sole focus of your energy is maybe not the end of the story. And certainly, you know, part of this is a pitch in terms of all the people on this podcast can help you with that broader strategy of then, well, what do you do? How do you pursue merit aid? We're not, you know, going to talk about all of those, that huge can of worms of scholarships and grants and things like that. But really the FAFSA is just one piece of the whole puzzle. And I've seen families where that's like, they think they're kind of done. Once they have it filled out, they've got their number, it's as low as they think they can get it. And then they're like, yep, good, we're ready for college. Like, oh no, you know, we need to talk about a number of other things like college selection, merit aid, your funding strategy, like how to get low cost loans. And so many people have to take out loans. You really want people to come away with that too. So if you're listening and thinking like, these are great tips for the FAFSA, I'm starting to figure out how to handle that, just know that that's kind of the opening volley in this great war for how to get you through on the college funding.
Right. So process. Much of what we talk about with families is the 4-year college funding plan, you know, so that they are able to take advantage of things like the tax credits, strategically using the 529 money so that they're able to, if they're eligible for tax credits, to get those, you know, year after year for each student. So yes, the 4-year funding plan is definitely part of the picture, and it does start with the FAFSA, it does start with the CSS profile, but it certainly doesn't end there, like you said. One last comment I wanted to remind listeners to is to pay attention to deadlines. I know for myself, I have a senior in high school this year, and we have already come up against some deadlines. And of course, in typical teenage fashion, have been working right up until those deadlines. So, you know, to know when not only the application deadlines are for each individual school, but also to know when their priority financial aid deadlines are, because they can be different and they can be also earlier than later. So if you're trying to, you know, get those financial aid forms in, pay attention to each school's financial aid deadlines. I'd like to thank Quinn Arnold of Arnold and Moat Wealth Management, Alyssa Lum of Luminate Financial Planning, and Brad Bob of Bob Financial for joining us today and taking the time to talk to us a little bit about the FAFSA and the CSS profile, and to share some of their knowledge to help families be smarter college consumers. And we want to thank you for listening to us and joining us today as well. We encourage you to continue the college funding conversation by joining our Facebook group called Ask the Experts About Paying for College. And watch out for the next episode of our podcast. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.